Welcome back to Ag Day here on WILO. Quick shout out to our sponsors, TTG Equipment, Ivy Tech Community College, Wampler Services Incorporated, the Farmers Bank, and Brock Grain Systems, along with all our Hoosierland TV sponsors, and CNR Catering for feeding us. They put out a good spread for us. We enjoy that, and Ellis Jewelers found something special for our guests. We want to give a quick shout out to them. We are back this afternoon with one of my favorite guests, and we were just talking about this because I've known her whole life, literally, which dates me pretty hard. But we're here with Jennifer Waite Dutton. Yes. I always forget to put the Dutton on there because to me it's still Jennifer Waite.
I'm sure her husband would appreciate it if you put
Dutton
on there.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. Well, and her kids too. Yeah. From Kokomo Grain, and Jennifer is in the marketing at Kokomo Grain. And Jennifer, thank you for coming back. I know we put you through the ringer a couple of years ago doing this, and we welcome you back and glad that you wanted to partake again.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back, Melissa and Adam. I really enjoy it.
I know a lot's going on right now with the markets. And
amen.
It's crazy. How in the heck are you, I mean, I'm just going to come right out there and say it. How in the heck are you guys, how is it going with your end of it? I know you've got a lot, you know, on both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
And what kind of advice are you giving to your producers right now?
Well, what we've been telling them is small scale-up selling because, you know, in the past, normally they might sell 5 or 10,000 bushels at a time. Instead of doing that, just do 1,000 bushels. 5,000 at the most, because this thing is so volatile and there's so many factors that we don't even know yet. You know, the Brazilian soybean crop is pretty much harvested. It's around, I think, 64% harvested, and we pretty well know the yields that are coming in there, and they've got a poor crop. That's part of the reason for the run-up in the soybeans is the South American crop is poor. It was too wet in northern Brazil, so the beans there, they were rotting in the pods. And then southern Brazil and Argentina were way too dry. And so the USDA drastically reduced those numbers in the last report. They put the Brazilian crop at 127 million metric tons. Last year they produced 138 million metric tons. Wow. Of soybeans. And CONAB, which is the equivalent of the USDA in Brazil, mm-hmm. has it down at 122.7. So they've got it even lower yet.
As I say, they've had a match. Massive drop.
Yes. Argentina, they're just getting ready to get started harvesting their beans, so that's kind of an unknown in the market yet, so that could affect us as well. We could get some more strength out of it. So far, they've got Argentina pegged at 43.5 million metric tons, the USDA has. That was below last year's 46.2 million metric tons, and the local grain exchanges have it pegged between 40 and 42 million metric tons for that crop. Hmm. So, like I said, that could really play into things. You've got our crop that has to be planted yet. You know, what if we have a late spring? What if we have growing issues? Demand is great out there. You know, China's been aggressively buying soybeans, and other countries are aggressively buying soybeans. We've got a very tight carryout. And a very similar situation on corn. Carryout's tight. World supplies are very tight as well, too. Last year, Brazil had a very poor safrinha crop, which is our second crop corn. And that's a lot of what they export. And so China ended up buying a majority of Argentina's second crop corn. And so those countries that would normally buy from Brazil and Argentina have bought corn from us instead. And then you throw Russia and the Ukraine war in there. The reason that's so important is they normally export about 30% of the world wheat and about 20% of the world corn. So you take them out of the equation because they're busy fighting mm-hmm. right now. You know, where are you going to get the global supplies to feed the world? And there's talk that there's about 6 million metric tons of corn left in the Ukraine that is supposed to be shipped to China. And is that business going to eventually come to the U.S.? Because they can't get out of the Ukraine right now because all of those ports are shut down because of the bombing mm-hmm. by Russia.
Right.
And like I said, you've got hedge funds investing in the commodities because of inflation fears. You've got rising inputs, you know, higher anhydrous prices, higher fertilizer costs, higher energy costs. I mean, it's just, it was just the perfect storm, and everything kind of came together at once. And there's still, it's going to be very volatile. So my opinion is, you see a strong up day, sell a little bit into it. And if you don't, you know, just try to be patient. But I think as long as you've got, you know, can sell above the loan rate for new crop, which on the corn it's 590 and on beans it's 1433, you need to start locking in some new crop. Because the last thing you want to happen is to have it pass you by, because at some point it's going to break.
Yeah.
We just don't know when.
No, exactly. We don't. Some like you said, it's going to break. The bottom's going to fall out of this somewhere. And, you know, I don't think it's, from what I know, what little I know, which is very little, I don't think it's going to drop a lot. But like you said, if it's going to drop below those loan rates, that could be, you know, a make or break.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
That was a whirlwind of information.
No, that's what I said.
Let's dissect that a little bit. I want to look at, I've had a lot of calls now. What can we do for spring wheat? You know, with the wheat market, and now I know it's coming back down, but man, it was soaring high there for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, but we definitely need to look at what we're going to do for the 2022 crop.
Exactly. What I told guys, if you know what your break even is, and some guys did already apply some, you know, chemical in the fall, they already have prepaid, they've locked in those prices. If they know what that is, their chemicals in yet. They need to find out how much it's going to cost them, because I'm afraid they might be unpleasantly surprised what that cost is going to be.
Well, yeah, and even with the fuel cost, if
exactly.
they didn't get those locked in early, they're hurting already.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And there was a group of legislators that have gone before the EPA and have asked them to increase the ethanol mandate E15 year-round. Now, I don't know if that's going to go through or not, because the Biden administration has recently reduced, you know, the renewable fuel standard. So I'm not so sure.
RFS, yeah.
Yeah. Biden has not been a friend to ethanol, so I'm not so sure he's going to go for this myself. But, I mean, it's very possible that he does. But on the flip side, the other thing you have to consider that could be the wild card in all of this is, does he say, okay, global food supplies are tight, and I need to reduce ethanol usage even more, and take corn out of use for ethanol? We need corn for food instead of ethanol. You know, that could be a wild card in this thing, which would really take corn prices lower. The other thing that could take corn prices lower is there were rumors in the market that Russia had asked China for help with military equipment. So does that mean we're going to impose sanctions on China because they're helping Russia? You know, we really depend on China and our farm economy especially. And if we do, it's going to be like 2018 all over again. Concerns about, you know, is there even going to be enough food demand in China right now because they're going on another lockdown for COVID.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they literally just went on lockdown this week for that.
Yeah.
51 million people are on lockdown now.
Yeah.
And that could definitely drive prices down just because there is no market for that. You were talking about the cost of everything going up for producers. It's the same for you guys. Your costs are going too, because a lot of times you help pay.
Yeah, our fuel surcharges are through the roof right now. I had to increase from 70 cents a mile up to $1 a running mile at the first of the year, and then because of what diesel has done recently, I had to increase 24 last week. So, yeah, it's jumped, and it's probably going to jump again next week, the way fuel costs are going.
Yeah, and that's crazy, because barrels of oil are down below $100 now, and the prices aren't coming down.
Right.
And they should be.
Yeah.
So that goes back to the companies themselves, but they're, you know, we could get on a whole soapbox with all of that.
This is why I love to have Jennifer in here, because I don't think people understand how global actions, things going on globally, affect our local markets like they do. You know, that's what you're explaining, what's going on down south and across the pond, really gives the listeners a good idea on you know, how we're in a global market. It's not just what the crush plant here in Frankfurt's doing, or you know, that it's China and Argentina and yeah. how much what goes on there really affects our farmers here locally.
Well, and it's the amount that is produced. It's crazy that our farmers, you know, the old saying, we feed the world. We do. Literally, we feed the world. And I don't think a lot of people take that into consideration, that these yields are amazing now with technology and research and everything. And then...
And continuing to go up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So... I know it's a wide open question, and especially like we talked about with the markets being so volatile. What are you planning? I mean, what I know you have to watch everything closely all day, every day, 24/7. But what are you looking at towards the future? What are you thinking? I mean, I know it's opinion. It's
right.
opinion based, but what are you thinking?
Well. One of the brokers I talked to on soybeans, she feels like in order to ration soybeans, we need to get somewhere between $18 and $20. I think that's a little stimmy. I think we, you know, $16, $17 might do it. But if we do have weather problems here, mm-hmm. or if China comes in and decides they suddenly want to buy a bunch, then, yeah, she might be right. We do need to get that high in order to ration demand, or if the Argentine crop is worse than what these numbers that I talked about earlier is worse than what we think, she very well might be right. I would guess probably your low is going to be around 16 on soybeans would be my guess. Now, they're saying right now on November beans, probably a good support is around 14.50. 14 to 14.50 would be a good support on November soybeans at this point, and with a high of around 16 is what the trade is thinking. On December corn, they're saying around 640 is the support level, and the highs you can build a case for around 715 to 780.
That's unreal. Of course, I remember when we were getting what we were happy with $1.99.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that dated myself again, but I remember when $1.99, you were thrilled, or anything over $2. Of course, there again, you know, our input costs weren't near as bad either.
True.
So.
2.25 corn. I remember guys getting excited about 2.25 corn and 2.50 corn, but I also remember when we had $8 corn, you know, it ended up messing up the market in the long run because of the higher costs, higher input costs.
Yeah, that was quite the wave to ride. I mean, it was great that fall, but, man, the repercussions from that were tough, and here we are over and above that.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on sustainability of this? Do you think we're gonna get back to see $4, $3 corn again, or are we going to ride this at $6.56 on forever on up now?
Well, on the corn, you know, we need the South American safrinha crop, the Brazilian second crop corn, to have a good crop. It's very critical that they have a good crop to help kind of dig us out of this hole. They're saying that they're going to have a dry March, April, May, which is not going to be good for their crop, because that's a lot of what they export, which means we could be in a similar situation, especially if we have crop problems. So those are the two things to watch, the weather in South America, or specifically Brazil, and the weather here, as to whether these higher prices will continue for corn. For soybeans, the situation is so tight, it's not only going to take a good U.S. corn or U.S. soybean crop, but it's going to take another good South American soybean crop in order to dig us out of the soybean hole that we're in with demand.
Oh, wow.
That's, man, that just seemed like that demand just crept up so quick.
Exactly.
And all this changed so fast. I don't know. How did we get there? How did that...
Well,
were we misguided by ending stocks? We thought we had, but we didn't?
Well, you know, it's hard to say there, but I think a lot of it was crop problems in other parts of the world. You know, like I said,
just all that perfect storm.
All that perfect storm. South America had problems in the safrinha crop last year. Their soybean numbers in Argentina were down a little bit last year. And then China, you know, they came back with hog production big time after going through African swine flu. They got back up to their record numbers.
Ramped up feed demand.
So that ramped up feed demand. So that started increasing soybean meal demand. And, you know, it, like I said, just the perfect storm.
I mean, I'm not complaining about the prices. I just, you know, wonder what sustainability is. If, you know, if you're looking to buy a piece of ground or, you know, investing in equipment for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Or do you sit on that windfall and wait and see what happens?
Yeah,
before you make that big expenditure. So.
Well, the other thing about China, too, is they're getting better incomes. And those people are getting older as well as better income. So they're wanting to eat more meat. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, they're eating fewer grains. They want more meat. So that's also increased the demand because, again, increased the hog numbers. It's increased feed demand overall for livestock.
Right.
So, you know, that's another big reason for the increase in feed demand.
Well, like you were talking about with China, we face the reality that they may decide, you know,
You're right.
And back out, which they have done.
Yep.
They have backed out. They have watched the prices plummet and then bought back in.
Correct.
And that could be an issue that we have down the road, too. Even if there are no sanctions brought, you know, if they are, you know, feeding Russia, which I'm sure they're feeding both sides, if the China likes to make money. They, you know,
they're not shrewd business.
They don't care which side they're supporting. Mm-hmm. They just want to make money.
True.
But, you know, they could come back and do that as well. If that happens, what, I don't know, I guess my thing is, your advice to producers is don't sell a lot all at once. Kind of like ride the wave and see what's going. Down the road, how much... Let's start with this. How much is out there? And I know you can't pull, you know, exact figures or anything, but with some of your producers, are they still sitting on a lot of grain right now? Or are they panicking and hauling it in, doing DPs right now, getting it out and
I think a lot of farmers are moving it, but what they do have left, they're holding on pretty tight. So, you know, and it's hard for me to kind of put a number on it. I would guess, and this is a wild guess.
Sure.
Yeah. Out of the air, you know, maybe they've got, you know, 30 to 40% left of, you know, what they had harvested. And maybe not even that much because they sold quite a bit at harvest. But I do have that handful of customers that held on looking for this big rally, and they've got it. And now they're waiting for the next leg up to sell the rest of it. They're waiting for that $8 corn. They're waiting for the $18 to $20 beans before they sell, you know, the final lag of it.
Right.
I was guilty hauling in $4 corn this last fall. Sold a year ago and thought it was great at $4, and, you know, then it was flying in at $6.
And I know a lot of producers did that. You know, they hauled in the fall just to cover expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And then went ahead and put it into storage and hoping that prices would go up, that it would continue to climb, and now they're capitalizing on it, and they're hauling a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like you, I kind of question hauling that much all at once, but I understand it, too, coming from the producer's side of it. I'd be pretty happy with it, too.
Right.
So,
but, Adam, to go back to what you were saying about hauling corn in at $4. You know, at the time you were hauling that in, you know, South America was planting and everything was looking great at that point in time. And they were talking about what a great crop South America was going to have. And, you know, things were looking good on the Russian crops. And so everything was kind of tanking. Really about the only thing that was kind of giving us some support was the fact that Brazil had the poor safrinha crop, so we had, you know, tough demand on corn, or a lot of demand on corn and poor world supplies on corn, and we needed a big crop to dig us out. And then you also had, where was I going with that? Oh, I lost my train of thought. Isn't that terrible? So you also had we're starting to talk about possibility of higher fuel costs and higher input prices, and inflation was starting to creep into it.
Right.
But, you know, we weren't really getting all excited about that yet, and there was a little bit of dryness in the plains, so that was, you know, causing the wheat to go higher, so that was helping the corn to pull higher. And if you looked at those numbers, those were historically good numbers at harvest.
Yeah.
You typically don't sell those numbers at harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're not bad sales.
It wasn't bad, you know? No, but yeah, no. Man, you didn't see the, definitely didn't see the, you know, the train coming at you when, with pricing.
Well, and like you said, we didn't see the input costs going like they are now.
Exactly.
Which, you know, for the new crop. And that's, that's just, that totally blows my mind how fast the input costs went
up. And all of a sudden there's a shortage that was, you know.
Yeah.
Which, I don't, as far as shortage goes, I think we all, I think hindsight, we knew that was going to happen. I mean, you know, if it's happening for a PS4, it's going to happen for everything else. I mean, be honest.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have those shortages with when you have the whole world shut down for a year. It's going to take 2 years. And I'm saying a year, you know, it may have been a little longer, but a lot of the countries were opening up, you know, before, after a year. But it's going to take 2-3 years to overcome that complete stop in everything. Except agriculture, and unfortunately, agriculture a lot of times pays the price.
Right. Well, and getting back to your point earlier about the higher input costs, one other thing I think we need to consider, too, is if you can't quite get the chemicals you need, what's that going to do to your yields? Are you going to have a yield drag? So you probably need to consider that. Right now, the trade's kind of thinking maybe a 5 to 10% drag on corn just because of not being able to get anhydrous. So that's something else to consider in your game plan, too.
You know, we've been preaching all year, too, that everybody thinks, oh, $1,500 a ton anhydrous, maybe we should cut back. None of the budgets that we're looking at support with $6 corn cutting back your in rate. Mm-hmm. It's continually still profitable to put your full maybe 10 units of in, but, I mean, statistically, that's really nothing. You know, so cutting back on the nitrogen, none of the budgets are supporting that with corn where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just need to really tighten in and hone in on what your break even is, I think, to look at marketing going forward.
Yeah, you don't have a choice. You've got to go back. And you go back through your history, too, of your farm and look at that as well. Because that's gonna give you an idea of writing out the weather.
Yeah,
you know, it's not going to help you with inputs. We already know that that's going to go through the roof. It already has, but it will help you with weather situations. You can go back and look. Well, this is what this farm did with this kind of weather, and it's going to increase our cost by this, and it may decrease our output, you know, by this, and look at those numbers too.
Right.
So farm history helps with some of that. So
we've ate up our time.
I know we have.
Any final thoughts, Jennifer, and how folks can get a hold of you?
Right, contact information, and then also like a final thought on, you know, you mentioned it before, what producers need to be watching, but maybe recap that again.
Well, you can always reach me at the office at 765-457-7211. You can catch us on the web at www.kokomograin.com. And the markets are going to be volatile. I mean, that's going to be the name of the game. It's going to give you opportunities for pricing, and you know, figure out your break-evens. You know, are you going to have a possible yield drag because you can't get the herbicides or the pesticides or whatever that you need? Because that's also a possibility, too. And, you know, figure out your marketing plan. Sell small amounts at a time. Maybe you take advantage of a minimum price contract to try
to put in an order. More people putting in orders, maybe.
Yes, put in open orders. Those are very key. That was going to be the next thing I said.
Okay, because sorry.
No, that's okay. I appreciate it, because a lot of times these highs will happen during the night session, and we don't necessarily revisit those highs during the trading session, during the day session, I should say. So those have been very critical the last month, I would say. A lot of guys have gotten some good prices. I've had some $15 new crop beans get filled because of the night session, and some, you know, $6.25 corn get filled because of the night session. So those open orders are very critical, but I still say small scale-up selling is probably the key to this thing right now.
So call Jennifer, and her team will help you with all the marketing options that are out there,
yes,
right?
We will do the very best that we can.
Lots of them, lots of tools in the toolbox.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, we want to thank you for hanging out with us and talking about marketing and enlightening our, for not only the producers, but also our just our general audience all the way around, and teaching them, you know, what it all it takes to get that grain to market and what our producers are looking at. You're going to stick around.
Yes, I am.
You're going to come back for our, we're going to have our next session, which is going to be our Women in Agriculture Roundtable, and Jennifer's going to stick around for that. So
I'm going to disappear.
We're going to stick him in the corner, and we're not going to let him leave. We want him to hear all of it. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with our roundtable session of Women in Agriculture right here on Ag Day on WILO.